Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hippie Witch, magic for a new age. I'm your host, Joanna DeVoe, and this is a happy, hippie place where magic with a K meets the law of attraction. Hi, thanks for joining me for episode 36. Woohoo! Sometimes it feels like more than that, and sometimes not. I love doing this show, and I'm so grateful for Blog Talk Radio. I was like signing in today, putting my little phone number in and my PIN number, and thinking about this is so amazing and magical that I get to talk to you guys every single week for free using this awesome tool. So I just interrupted my own little introduction out of just pure gratitude, and I think I'm going to talk about gratitude next week because Thanksgiving is coming up. But let me go back to my little spiel. But how do I do this? Thanks for joining me for episode 36 of Hippie Witch, Magic for a New Age. My name is Joanna DeVoe, and I am the kooky, life-loving creatrix behind Kick-Ass Witch, putting the K in magic, and of course, Hippie Witch, the show you are listening to right now. I also have a free ebook by that name, Hippie Witch, Peace, Love, and All That Good Shit, and you can pick up a copy of that at www.joannadevoe.com. And today, I am very excited about what I'm going to be talking about, and I hope that I can get it all out in a coherent manner, because this is one of those subjects that I am in grave danger of going off on any number of tangents, because it's just really fun to talk about. And also, when you start thinking about it, you realize how many different areas of life this comes into play. And what I'm talking about here is glamour. And no, this is not an episode just for women. This is not about how to do your hair and nails to look more glamorous. Although I suppose on some level that does apply, but what I am talking about is how we can magically alter our breath, our voice, our body language, and yes, our appearance to have an effect on other people. And it can actually go a lot deeper than the surface of, you know, your breath, your body language, your visuals, and all of that. And I will get into a little bit about that later. Remember the movie The Craft. If you're into anything to do with magic, I'm guessing that you do, and you've probably seen it more than one time. You know, when the girls are sitting around with Robin Tooney's character, I forget what her character's name is, but they're messing around with her ability to change her eye color or her hair at will using magic. That is kind of the Hollywood version of what a glamour is. And a real glamour is actually kind of like that too, except for we can't just focus really hard and change the color of our hair. But, you know, we have salons for that. And before anyone gets upset about the ethics of performing a glamour or worries about my endorsing the manipulation of other people for one's gain, I have two things to say about that. One is that it's really up to you how you choose to use this information. You can use it for good or bad, so to speak, and that karma is on you. A real narcissist, like a real clinically diagnosed narcissist, which probably wouldn't be clinically diagnosed because they're too slippery for that, but a real narcissist or a psychopath getting a hold of this kind of information could be a recipe for disaster. But the chances are that they've already gravitated toward this information anyway, because that's like their stock and trade practically. But a kind, loving person will use it in a kind, loving way. So don't blame the gun, blame the shooter. You know what I'm saying? And the other thing is that you're probably already using glamour to one degree or another in your own life anyway, so you might as well start using them consciously and to greater effect, more with more precision. So now that we've gotten that out of the way, I just had some in the back of my mind that people might be like, is this ethical? And because that's a thought that I've had too. It's, I am like not a good salesperson at all. Actually, that's not true. I used to sell clothes back in the day, and I was good at it. But I was good at it because I'd always be real with the customers. I'd be like, no, 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 you do not want those jeans. They make your butt look huge. Try these. But in terms of using, like, sales tactics to manipulate other people to feel like we have a rapport so that I can make sales, that has always made me feel so uncomfortable and inauthentic, like I'm stepping out of integrity. So I've never really been able to get into that. I'm trying to learn how to be a good salesperson without having to have that ick feeling around it. But that all kind of comes into play with performing a glamour, because a good salesperson is often very good at performing a magical glamour, which I guess you will understand better as I go along. Did you know that the word glamour actually comes from magic or witchcraft? I was so excited when I found that out. Etymologically speaking, glamour is a noun that originated in 1720. It was a Scottish word that meant magic or enchantment, especially in phrase to cast the glamour, which is kind of like what we were talking about with the craft, to cast the glamour. And it was a variation of the word, and I'm not going to say this right. Let me spell it for you. G-R-A-M-A-R-Y-E, grammarier, maybe? I don't know. That sounds French, the way I'm saying it, but it's actually a Scottish word as well, which meant magic, enchantment, or spell. And I cannot tell you how happy that makes me to know that the word glamour, which I've just always associated, you know, with Hollywood and glamorous women, to find out that that's actually derived from and came from magic and witchcraft. I don't know why that makes me happy. It just does. It's just a delightful little factoid. And according to Wikipedia, glamour, the word glamour originally was a term applied to a magical occult spell that was cast on somebody to make them see something the spellcaster wished them to see, when in fact it was not what it seemed to be. And again, that's going back to that moment in the craft. I did link to a little clip from the craft in the show notes, which I have not published yet, but I will publish them right after this show. Back on www.joannadebow.com, I put a little clip. It's actually two clips from the craft that someone on YouTube smushed together, one where the girls are sitting there practicing doing their glamour, and then the other later on in the movie when someone actually takes the glamour too far, takes it to the dark side. And in the late 19th century terminology, going back to what Wikipedia has to say about glamour, in the late 19th century terminology, a non-magical item, it was a non-magical item used to help create a more attractive appearance. That's what it gradually became to be known as. Sorry, I'm totally reading this and I'm not making any sense now. I realize I'm like, what am I reading? A glamour was originally said to be a spell cast by a witch to make somebody see things in a different way. And then late in the 19th century, you know, a couple hundred years later, the common meaning shifted to being applied to ordinary objects and jewelry without connotations of the supernatural. It merely was about the effect on, you know, of someone's appearance. And let's see, it says, this is a sense used, that does not make any sense. Why did I just cut and paste this on here? I can't even tell what I'm reading. So the Hollywood system adopted the word in the early 19th century, and that's why now we have come to know it as being really related to style or beauty, but it doesn't necessarily have to do with style or beauty. Wikipedia says, although glamour may give the appearance of beauty, or present as a personal style, it doesn't necessarily have to do with beauty. And this is something that women like Dita Von Teese and Marilyn Monroe understand very well. Madonna in her heyday was pretty good at it too. And these women discovered the power of image. and a power that goes well beyond physical attractiveness. They've actually created this entire, like, character, you know, that we've come to know them as, and God knows who's underneath that character. You know, Marilyn Monroe was actually Norma Jean. Dita Von Teese was a blonde, gosh, I feel like she was from Orange County. I mean, so the antithesis of what you would think of as Dita Von Teese. And so as not to exclude the men here, let me just say that many men have used this power to great effect as well. Charlie Chaplin, Michael Jackson, and even Albert Einstein, with his wild, nutty professor hair, understood the power that their image had on other people. And it's not just about physical appearance. Performing a glamour can include any number of the senses, or if you're really skilled, it can be about tapping into someone else's vibe on an even deeper level. But before I go there, let's just talk about image for a second and how glamour is played out today. We have celebrities, you know, we have stars, Kim Kardashian, whose entire celebrity is based solely on the way that they look. And they know it, and they play that card all the way to the bank. I know this is upsetting to some people, but it is just a fact of life. It goes way back all through human history. We are largely visual creatures, and we will respond differently to a man in a well-pressed three-piece suit with a sharp haircut stepping out of a Bentley than we will a man who is covered in filth with matted hair and a shopping cart. I know that that's not the cutest thing about us, but that is true of most of us. We will most likely have a different feeling about those two different men. Even if it was the same man, like if an actor, I'm sure this would be an awesome behind-the-scenes experiment to film an actor, you know, stepping out in his three-piece suit from a Bentley and looking all sharp and then, you know, just walking around a crowded public area. It would be interesting to see the way people interact with him and look at him and then have him come back around later, you know, with a crazy matted wig on and filthy clothes and pushing a shopping cart. I think that would be a pretty revealing experiment. And animals do this too. Birds and monkeys and insects, they all have their own unique ways of attracting a mate or fending off an enemy. They may puff out their chests or display like a really bold shock of color. They might have a little funky dance they do or a particular way of holding their body that cues other animals into knowing, it's on, mofo, or it's on, bum chicka bow bow. And in that sense, I actually feel that we as humans are extremely lucky. We are the only animals who have the privilege of working with a huge paint box of colors. We have innumerable gestures and costumes and masks and workout regimes and plastic surgery and psychological techniques and makeup and you name it at our disposal. So every day is a blank canvas for creating, and this ability we have to reinvent ourselves is a gift. And when I say reinvent ourselves, I'm not talking about who you are at your core, but who are you at your core? Do you even know? Isn't it interesting how one day you can actually be so bold in your words or actions that you actually surprise yourself? Or at least I hope that you've surprised yourself at least once in your life. And if you know yourself so well, how can you surprise yourself? Does that even make sense? And isn't it funny to look back at photos of yourself from the past and see how you've physically changed over the years? Chances are you will probably laugh at least one of your former hairdos, especially if you're a child of the 80s. But back then, you thought you looked good. You were rocking those bangs. So what has changed now that you're sporting a shiny, sensible bob? Is who you are at your essence any different than it was back then? Maybe you feel that who you are now is more authentic than who you were pretending to be back then, and that may be true. But a decade from now, you might look back on who you are today and say the same thing. So I just think that's interesting to think about. Never underestimate the power of hair. As Tess McGill's best friend Cindy says in one of my all-time favorite movies, Working Girl, you want to look powerful? You need powerful hair. And Lori Cabot has an interesting take on Halloween and costumes that I think applies to this. She talks about how in her circle, they don't let people dress up like scary things for Halloween. She has them dress up symbolically as the people that they would like to become or what they would like to manifest into their life in the year ahead. And I think she's really on to something there. There's a real power in that. And I went to I'm running out of time, and here I go on a tangent. Let me just say really quickly, I went to a Halloween party this year. That was crazy. So many naked butts hanging out at the bottom of these little costumes. But what I really noticed beyond that was how, and I'm sure this had something to do with alcohol and maybe even drugs, but some people, when they put a costume on, it is amazing how their personality seems to change completely. It really just emboldens them to do things they wouldn't normally do. And so I think, wow, is the mask hiding who they are? Or is it actually revealing who they really are? And then it's interesting to see how they have completely different interactions with the world around them and with the people around them, which reminds me a little bit of the anonymity on the web and how people are masked sometimes. They use fake usernames, and they'll do things that they would never do if you actually knew their name. So it's interesting to think about how a mask, is that actually an inauthentic thing to wear? Is putting on that makeup every morning, is that being inauthentic to who you are? Or is it giving you a certain level of comfort that allows different aspects of your personality to be revealed? Super interesting. You know, those parts that normally might be lurking in the shadows, you give them a mask and boom, all of a sudden they're like the life of the party. And this is something that can come in handy in your everyday life because it's all about vibration, especially when we're talking about interacting with other people. And I know, you know, a glamour is usually used to elicit a particular response from someone you're trying to seduce, a potential lover, or a potential boss, a job you're trying to get, or like I was saying, with salespeople. So when you think about, you know, that a pair of red high heels has a different vibe than a pair of worn-out sneakers, and they both will elicit a particular feeling in you, and that will in turn elicit a particular feeling in the people that you interact with. And if you want to test this theory beyond the visual aspect, wear something really confining or weird or especially racy under your everyday work clothes, something that is a secret meant only for you. And it could be a little kinky and freaky, or it could just be a symbol written on your chest in lipstick, but something that has an effect on you, you know, something that you find humorous or naughty, or it's something that elicits some kind of emotional reaction in you, but that is completely hidden from other people. And then see how it affects your vibe and the way that you move and feel, and then especially the way other people respond to you as a result. That is a worthy experiment. And authors writing about witchcraft will sometimes mention wardrobe or color and its effect on us in passing in their books. I've noticed often there'll be like a little section. For example, Ellen Dugan in her book Natural Witchery, she has a groovy little section called The Job, The Witch, and The Wardrobe, in which she talks about how you dress at work is important in terms of your career. And then she goes on to break down different meanings for different colors. Back in the day, I was super enamored with Carol Jackson's book, Color Me Beautiful. I think it's from either the late 70s or the early 80s. I can't remember, but I found it in my teens at my stepmother's house. Yes, I had a stepmother in my teens. That's so much about me. Not stepmother, mother-in-law, sorry. I got married when I was 18. Anyway, the introductory chapter of that book is literally called The Magic of Color, and it's all about how wearing different colors changes the way you look. And I was super into that. And then Anais Nin's book, The Diary of Anais Nin, she has a section. I'm going to read it to you, actually. I have it with me right now. At the very beginning of that book, she has a passage that seriously influenced who I am forevermore. She talks about this house that she lived in such a charming, endearing way that I fantasized all through my 20s about living in a house like that. And then when I finally got a house of my own, I did what she did, which was to paint every room a different color to create a different mood. And it absolutely works. And it looks really nice, too. But I just want to read what she said, because she says it in such a charming Anais kind of way. She says, "Every room is painted a different color, as if there were one room for every separate mood. Lacquer red for vehemence, pale turquoise for reveries, peach color for gentleness, green for repose, gray for work at the typewriter." I love that. She's so romantic, but it's not just about her and affecting her mood. It would affect her guest mood, too, and I think that's so interesting. Science has even measured the way that certain colors affect people. Red can make them angry or excited. A soft green can create a feeling of safety. And pink used to be used in the mental wards of hospitals because it actually has a soothing effect. And my grandmother, who was not at all... Not superstitious. Maybe, yeah, superstitious. She used to warn me to never wear pink because it drains you of your energy. There are books on glamour and books on the effects of color, but I often wondered why there wasn't a magical book just about that subject, you know, not just a little section thrown in like, oh, yeah, and what you wear affects other people, but like a whole subject on that. So I thought it was pretty fun when Tess Whitehurst, who is a popular writer for Llewellyn, she came out with a book this year called Magical Fashionista. And she talks about how what you wear is a very personal art form. And I was going to talk about that with you today, but I'm looking at the time right now, and I'm realizing I just spent all of my time talking about glamour in an almost superficial way, like how the way we look affects the way we feel and how other people feel about us, but it really goes beyond image. So I'll just say Tess Whitehurst's book, Magical Fashionista. The cover's a little off-putting. It's got kind of like a chick lit vibe to it that's not that appealing to me, but I really enjoy the book inside, and you might too. It's super fun and interesting. It's not that deep, but also she makes some really cool points in it, and I really like it, so check it out if you're interested. But going beyond image, getting into back in the day, I used to study method acting, and one of the techniques we worked with was called an animal exercise. So, you know, your assignment was to spend a week with an animal, studying that animal, studying how it breathed and how it moved and how it observed the world around it, and then you would try to copy it and emulate it. And then, you know, you'd bring it into class, and then the teacher would help you work that into a character you were developing. And it had an incredibly magical effect and would really bring to life these characters, you know, like a slinky cat or a slithering snake. It would have a different effect on how the character behaved and moved. And really talented method actors can really use this effect powerfully. And it's something that's worth considering if you're interested in working with glamours and stuff. Maybe one afternoon, spy on your cat a little bit and see how they interact with the world and maybe experiment with that a little bit yourself. In NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, which is what I was really wanting to talk about today, I'm starting to think I should just put this in two parts because I am literally limited to 30 minutes, and now I'm starting to trip over my tongue seeing that I only have 6 minutes. Maybe I'll revisit this next week and push the gratitude thing back. I don't know. You guys can let me. If you're just dying to hear more about glamours, let me know. Like, shoot me a message over on Facebook or something. But basically, one of the techniques for neuro-linguistic programming, which is all about rewiring the programming in your mind and creating new neural pathways in your mind and using techniques to elicit certain responses out of people, one of the techniques is called mirroring or matching, and it's all about developing rapport with other people. And I went and looked up the word rapport to give us all like a little ground us in what that word meant before we talked about that. And rapport is a close and harmonious relationship in which people or groups understand each other's feelings or ideas and communicate well. So it has a little bit to do with manufacturing empathy, really, on some level. Rapport occurs when two or more people feel that they are in sync or on the same wavelength because they feel similar or relate well to each other. Rapport is theorized to include three behavioral components: mutual attention, mutual positivity, and coordination. It's about how people relate to each other, and what one person sends out, the other sends back. And there are a number of techniques that are supposed to be beneficial in building rapport, such as matching your body language to another person's, maintaining eye contact, matching breathing rhythms, and a lot of people, you know what, gosh dang it, I really want to get into this in more depth, and I have a whole bunch I want to say, so I think I'm just going to come back tomorrow and say it all. I've made up my mind. I don't need you to tell me that you want me to talk about this in more depth because I want to talk about it in more depth. So I'm just going to throw an extra show in. I'm free tomorrow at noon. I will be here tomorrow at noon because I want to talk about neuro-linguistic programming without trying to cram what I have to say into a couple minutes' time because it's super interesting and super fun, and I don't know if I have another 30 minutes worth of talking that I could do on this subject, but knowing me, I probably do, because it's really interesting and fun, and you know me and my tangents, maybe I'll just go on a few tomorrow. So, yeah, let's pick this up tomorrow, and I hope you enjoyed what I had to say about image and the visual aspects of creating a glamour and how you can utilize that to elicit certain responses in people. I didn't even really get that in depth into how you can put that on to create certain responses in other people, so maybe I will talk a little bit about that tomorrow. I'm not going to, but just, you know, joking, I feel like I need to start practicing these shows so I can figure out how much I can fit into these 30 minutes. But I haven't had this problem in a while. In the beginning, it was a big problem, but lately my shows have been under 30 minutes, all of them. I guess this subject is just too much fun, and I've got too much to say about it, so I will be here tomorrow. I hope you'll join me tomorrow at 90 seconds. Tomorrow at noon. Okay. Much love to you. Peace.